Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you leave?
Baghdad, the Basra, the boss from the Bakersfield, the hottest battle they ever fought, it's raging inside of me. My brain has been battered, scrambled and rattled, and no one knows what's going on with me. I walk the halls and I've climbed the walls, drink everything inside, swallowed all I could find. Look for stronger things to cool my weary mind. Put that 8-ball and 38 won't save my life. 'Cause I have brain storms, I have rainstorms, and I can't wait till that morning light comes. Found hope in the most peculiar place. By the grace of God, I'm still in the human race. Broke free from this broken brain. Restore my will, refine my faith. 'Cause I had brainstorms, I had rainstorms, but now I can't wait till that morning light shines.
And welcome to another episode of Continue Mission. I'm your host, James McCormick. That's a new song. It's not really a new song. It's been around a while. I was talking to Kim about that. We just found we have another mutual friend, Dr. Chris Ann Gordon. You know, this is the Brain Injury Radio Network, and we do have a place on here because we all share one thing in common, and that is we have all experienced a traumatic brain injury, whether it be from an accident or whether it be from multiple hits from boxing or whether it be from a roadside bomb blast or whatever. It definitely changes the whole dynamics of your life. And many things have occurred in our lives, and we don't understand what's going on sometimes. So, And we get confused, and we forget things from time to time, and we find out that we just get mad for some reason and can't figure it out, and then we can get sad for some reason. You know, not all these things are mental issues, psychologically driven impulses that you just need to medicate. Some of it is the reality is that our brains have changed, and we have to change with it so that we can move forward and do what we need to do in order to be successful, to survive, to move forward with life. You know, life is ever-changing. We all struggle with losses and victories and births and, unfortunately, death. And these things are very tragic in our lives. But I want you to know that we care. And we've been doing this show for a little over 5 years. I think it's closer to six now. I'm not. Talked to Kim today. Kim Justice, you know, she has a radio show. She kind of keeps us all corralled together. And we're very thankful for Kim and all that she's done for us. And over the many years, she has a wonderful, wonderful show, wonderful talent, and a love for life. And, you know, we probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. This show's for you. So tonight, you know, as usually, I go into talking about current events. I want you to Google the name Chief Chris Beck. Chief Chris Beck was a United States Navy SEAL, always will be a Navy SEAL, very good friend of mine, who had served 20 years in SEAL Team 6, the most elite of the elite. When Chris Beck came back from multiple deployments and combat injuries and a brain injury, he made some changes in his life and decided to seek some help, and was told rather quickly that he must be a transvestite or a transgender. One visit, they gave him this diagnosis and said, hey, you need to go and start taking hormone therapy, replacement pills, and all this other stuff. And now you will see that going through this transition, 2013, until about 2000 and this year, 2022, Chris was known as Kristen Beck, faced a lot of hardships. But it's coming out and speaking out, pressure that was applied to him to accept this transition, forced him into believing. Here a man has a brain injury. Here a man has been wounded for his country. Here a man served as a United States Navy SEAL. And you go to seek help as they tell you to go seek help. And you're honest with people. Chris Beck will tell you that he's not a victim, that I did this to myself. He's not looking for pity. But what he is doing is he's sounding a very loud alarm. And the alarm is that the LGBTQ community has a side of them that has infiltrated nearly every facet of government and the medical profession, that has given advice to people who are struggling. Maybe they have a traumatic brain injury. Maybe they are confused. Maybe they have post-traumatic stress. And they're stretching that into children and convincing children at a young, impressionable age that you weren't meant to be a boy or you weren't meant to be a girl, has been on the inside of that and seen that, and is now accepting responsibility and transitioning back. Good for you, Chris Beck. Good for you, Chief. We got your six. We'll always have had your six. We've always been respectful of Chief because, from anybody, is that service. I was not a Navy SEAL, and I can't even imagine what it was like to go through that training to get to the point to where you wear that trident. I know why now they get so upset when people fake it and make up things, you know, the stolen valor thing. And the. Of course, I get equally upset when people lie about having purple hearts, like the gentleman that we had that came on our show one time, David Roby. claimed he was a 2 Purple Heart recipient and never, ever left the continental United States and wasn't even in the military during any, came on the show and threatened to shoot me one time about 4 years ago for exposing him. And some of his other friends and stuff, you know, that said these things are also part of that LGBTQ plus community that push violence. And they're your friends as long as you're doing what they want you to do. Now, I have friends that are homosexuals, and they live a lifestyle that, and they're very private people, but they're not part of that community. And they're appalled as most Americans would be, as most human beings would be, pressure that the government is putting on children with these young, impressionable minds, and these veterans like Chris Beck, who had 13 tours in combat and should have been partnered up with somebody else besides this kook that decided after one trip, transgender. That person should have their license revoked. And I hope that Chief exposes them for the scandalous shammer that they are. Because they work for the Veterans Administration. They work in the VA healthcare system. We're going to get your name. We're going to get your number. I'm telling you, you're going to get put out there, and you're going to get the truth told on you. You don't have to lie on anybody. I'm telling you, all you have to do is tell the truth. The truth, my friends, will set you free. But the truth will also set the devil to flee. Remember that. So we have all of this going on. And it's very personal for me because I'm not trying to bash the people that I know are living a life as homosexuals. I don't believe in that lifestyle. But they're not pushing it on anybody. And they would definitely never, ever try to influence the mind of a child. We just saw where this guy, non-binary guy that was responsible for nuclear waste rods, stealing luggage. Well, they finally fired him. But then more dirty stuff came out, like the fact that during his investigation, they had found where he had visited child pornography sites where children under the age of 18 could go and look for homosexual hookups. Now, the fact that anything like that even exists in this country, I think speaks a volume about the level of disgusting, despicable conduct that we have fell into. The attitudes of people to try to defend that position. Parents, you need to get engaged. Don't just trust. Start going to these school board meetings again. You get involved. Find out what's being said in these classrooms. We're very fortunate where I live at. Totally engaged. We ask questions. We go to school parent-teacher meetings. And we're not afraid to speak up if we hear something or see something. And we need to start doing that as Americans because we've lulled ourselves to sleep. Now, I get it. We went through the Donald Trump phase, and a lot of people were angry because you don't like his attitude or you don't like the way that he spoke to people. Well, neither did I. I think there's a level of personalism that needs to be maintained at all levels of leadership, but especially that level of leadership. But because that, people were upset, and now we have what we have now. Now, we saw a degradation in society already coming. We saw it during the Obama administration, but it was subtle. It's on heroin and fentanyl now, folks, going like a steamroller. But people are waking up and they're seeing things. I'm watching things. Probably the best thing that happened to America was Elon Musk purchasing and taking over Twitter and putting an end to this nonsense. But now the craziness is still on there. Just go on there and take a look. Social media has warped the minds of our citizens, has put us in a position to where we constantly question going on, but then we're lulled to sleep whenever the physical things that you can affect and influence, you say nothing because you are out of reality. And you're totally stuck in this conundrum, for lack of better term, where you can't make a decision because you don't want to get talked bad about on Facebook. They drug my name through the garden on Facebook, especially when I exposed them for lying about being Purple Heart recipients. You dirty worms. And I'm telling you, there's more than one of them. And I'll bust more. And I'll continue to expose them and their rottenness whenever they lie and they do this. That's what I do. And it was tough because they dox you. They use social media to go after your children. They send letters to folks, just like they're doing to Elon Musk. Somebody came after, you know, jumped on the hood of a car that had his son in there. Changing. You can see and you can sense the winds of change that are going on right now. If you truly love freedom, then you will speak up. So I don't want to digress too far, but the whole issue with Chris Beck and the way that a United States Navy SEAL was pressured and pushed, given money to accept this must be who I am. And he lived a lie, and he will be the first to tell you that. He lived a lie for just over 6 years. But thank you, God, because now you've opened his eyes, coming out, and he's going to be the greatest advocate. He's going to expose the dirty, rotten inner workings of this organization, this group of people who have done everything to silence the voice of civility, decency. They are trying to legalize pedophilia. They want to classify it as a lifestyle or a choice. Being gay or transgender or whatever else that is going on now, queer, gay, trans, bi, I don't know. But when you see the P go into that for pedophilia or whatever it is that they're trying to call it now, understand that the freedom, the Marriage Freedom Act is not a good thing. Because notice what is said, titled, the president says this. It's finally recognized that it's important. It's the only thing that's important is about who you love. You're allowed to love who you want, really? So that 65-year-old man can love that 10-year-old kid, girl or boy, and can marry them maybe in some places. Or can love them and can have relations with them. You be very careful how you vote, America. You might think they may come out with these flowery speeches saying that we're going to promote love and harmony and unity. not always the case. In some cases, they've just unleashed a bunch of perverts in these offices, and they're trying to fulfill their lustful desires. Oh, I know, I'll be painted as a lunatic and crazy and hater and all these things, and that's fine. Try to use Jesus Christ's own words to justify their actions. About, aren't you supposed to love everyone? Jesus Christ said, woe to them that harm the hair on one of these children's heads. Or it'd be better for that man to have a millstone tied around his neck and to be thrown into the depths of the sea. Now, if you've never seen a millstone, understand that it takes about four men to move that. Tying one of those around your neck, regardless of how strong of a swimmer you are, pretty much tells you exactly what Jesus Christ thought about those that hurt children. And if you think for 1 minute that having sex between an adult and a child is not hurting that child, then you're sicker than we thought. And maybe you need to go see that psychiatrist. I'm sure that Chris Beck will be able to give you one's name here before long, whenever he comes down on Fox News and Fox and Friends and wherever else he can get at to speak on this. I'm sure CNN and MSNBC has already turned him down in The View. They don't want nothing to do with him now. But they would have loved to have had him on there when he was Christian Beck, when he was living a lifestyle that inside he always knew was wrong. But he's coming out now, coming out in a different way, folks. In a way that's going to upset the apple cart of the alphabet group. So anyway, I've said my piece. And if I up radio, deal with it. Because I've been upset myself a few times. And actually sitting here thinking to how close we are to seeing the legalization of pedophilia in this country. We are so close. And if you don't think it can happen, then think again. Because it's happening. And it's happening every day in this country. And only you can stop it. Don't talk about going to vote. Don't talk about making a donation to an organization that is standing up and speaking out against this. Do it. And take your friends with you and talk to your family about what's going on. These groups are disgusting and despicable. And if they really want to know what Jesus Christ thinks about it, remind them of the millstone. We should be free to love who we want to love. I'm waiting for a reporter to have enough intestinal fortitude to stop him and say, does that mean, what's the limits on that? Can we change a who to maybe I can marry a dog? I guess some people have done it. Children that I worry about more than anything else. And exactly why Chris Beck came out and speaking out. And yes, he was a celebrity, an absolute celebrity. He was a celebrity. And wrote a book, him and this doctor that diagnosed him with this, wrote a book. He made money. He made money. But it just finally ate to the core of him. Especially now that you see, ironically, a rise in suicide among the youth. You see this rise in this crazy agenda pushing among the youth. And suicide rates are rising at the same time. Is this a coincidence? I don't think it is. And parents, you better get engaged. You better get engaged. We can talk about abortion. We can talk about this, but I'm hammering away on you. Folks, LGBTQ plus community, you need to really think about what you're doing. Because you're getting ready to get checked hard. And I wish that the elections would have been a whole lot better in the midterm. And we could have dumped a lot more of these kooks. How in the world do these kooks get elected? A kook that comes in. Oath is her hate and disgust for America. Ilhan Omar. And sits in Congress as a millionaire. 10 years ago, she didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. Now, she's a celebrity. Because I am. Because I know this is not the country that George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Jefferson and Ronald Reagan and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy. This isn't the country that they envisioned, that they fought for, that they worked for, that they strived for. Oh, sure, there are people that are going to live a lifestyle that we don't approve of. What you do in your personal bedroom is your business. It becomes our business when it becomes forced on us. And I went back to the gentleman that was responsible for nuclear waste, the rods, you know, stealing luggage, and all of that stuff that comes out. You know, that's what you get when you hire because you're trying to appease a certain demographic or a person or a group and not actually looking for people that are qualified to do the job. How about we make hiring all about merit again? I don't care what you have between your legs, color you are. I don't care what your sexual orientation is. Are you the best qualified for this job or not? And if you aren't, you don't get hired. You don't get a leg up. You don't get a step up. You don't get hired. If we did more of that, especially among the teachers, you know, everybody talks about teacher shortages. I've got two sons that have degrees, and it's hard for them to get a job teaching. You're going to get looked at heavy. They're going to look at your social media. They're going to check you out. They want to make sure that you're going to fit in. And we wonder what's going on with our kids in America. You wonder what's going on with the kids in America. I can remember my teachers. They were all World War II and Korean War and Vietnam veterans. And they spoke openly and proudly about the love of their country. I never knew if they were Democrats or Republicans, and we didn't care because we knew that they loved us and they cared about us and they taught us. They taught us what the class was. They didn't try to push garbage down our throat or indoctrinate us. Except it's about America. Because every class had an American flag in it. Every class that I can remember going to school in, there was something about this country that hung on a wall. Math class, anything. I'm telling you, it was there. Boys dressed in the boys' locker room, girls dressed in the girls' locker room. If you was a boy, you played against the boys. If you didn't win, then work harder. Maybe you'll win the next time. You didn't get to say, well, I think I'm going to identify as a girl now, and I'm going to go run track or swim or whatever against the girls so I can win. That right there is a slap in the face to the women's movement that worked for 100 years to try to get themselves their own sports, to try to get themselves the vote, and to try to get themselves to be recognized as women. Every one of those pioneers are rolling in their graves right now because never would they have envisioned that would have slipped off the cracker this far to the left. So anyways, I'm glad I got everybody fired up tonight. Thanks for being on the show. Let's get Father Michael Patel on here. I went a little bit over, Father Mike, so I'm going to give you some extra time.
Okay.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. And you got the show, sir.
All right. Well, as you were talking about so many things, especially about our country, I was a part of a commissioning service today and so honored to be there. Spoke to someone from the Marine Corps, from the Air Force. Certainly it was an Army commissioning service, and I offered the prayers. And it was just a beautiful, accepting, honoring situation. And to see those young lieutenants receiving that sacred trust to serve our country in a selfless manner. So you've really brought out a lot of important patriotic things, you know, about being an American. And that's so important. We're so divided because we're forgetting the fact that we're Americans. When I went to Italy the first time in 1988, it's funny because I'll be talking about Moses going to the mountain and then wondering whether he was going to come back or not. I spoke to my four-year-old daughter at the time, and she said to me, "Daddy, are you coming back?" And it's very interesting how important the family is, how important the certain structure of a culture and a society is to everything that we're about. But, you know, I've been in many of these ceremonies, but I was honored to be the chaplain today and to see three more men, it happened to be, you know, take the oath today. Well, I want to talk about idolatry, and I've thought about this for a couple of weeks, and I'll be reading through Exodus chapter 32. I came across a saying that really impacted me, and it's from somebody I highly respect, but they were repeating it from someone else. And that is, our hearts are idol-making machines. Now, when the Bible says God is jealous, it's not like God is insecure, but when we make other gods, whether we make a graven image of another god that's not God, that can't hear, that can't see, that can't smell, that can't speak, or if it's something that we esteem higher than God, something that we worship as if it were a god. I want to talk about idolatry. You know, of course, in America, we think about, you know, greed and money. You know, sex, you were talking about pornography and child pornography, and but I want to hone in a little more of what this sin might really be. And I think an idol is anything that replaces God as our object of worship. And we know in the commandments it tells us not to have any other gods before us because there are no other gods. Nor to make certain things, even though there was beautiful artistry in the tabernacle, but to worship them as God. So I'm going to read through the 32nd chapter of Exodus, make some comments. We're all familiar with the weak leadership of Aaron. Moses was with God 40 days in the mountain. And these children wondered what happened to him. And so they started acting out and doing some things. And we'll see as we look into the wording more carefully, they were really involved in orgies and all kinds of ungodly things. And here Moses is receiving the Ten Commandments from God. And as you know, Moses was the first one to break those commandments that were written by the finger of God because of what the people were doing. So this is concerning the golden calf, And there's just a lot of innuendos, a lot of insight we can receive from this story. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, up, it's like a command, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So they're like children. You know, the parents are away. They saw miracles through Moses. They almost deified him. But now they're losing patience. And they go to Aaron. And Aaron, although he was a spokesperson, was considered a weak leader. And we'll see and how they get out of control as he tries to appease them. And Aaron said to them, maybe trying to delay what they were trying to do, take off the rings of gold, which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me. Remember, the Egyptians couldn't wait to have them leave, so they gave them some of these goods. And they were ready to give them up. Maybe they thought they would die in the wilderness, but they were willing to give them up. And it's interesting what happens and how Aaron later lies to Moses about really what happened. So all the people took off the rings of gold, which were in their ears, and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold at their hand and fashioned it with a graven tool and made a molten calf. And they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made proclamation and said, you know, he's trying to still bring them back to their consciousness of the Lord, Yahweh. Tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And I looked into the Hebrew, play, and it's really engaging in sexual orgies. So they're totally out of control because their leadership is not there. They're not sure what's going on, what the direction is. And so they want some security. And so they want something that they can say, you know, this is my higher power, okay? And so we see how Aaron appeases them. But all of us do that. We talked last week about being impatient when we're trying to hear from God and we go to illegitimate sources. Verse 7, and the Lord said to Moses, go down, for your people, God's disowning them. Earlier on, he made them his people, whom you brought up out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf and have worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And the Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people. Behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them. But of you I will make a great nation. And it's interesting now how Moses reminds God, not that God forgets, but many times we do this in prayer, about his covenant promises. Moses begged the Lord his God and said, O Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people? He's putting it back on God. God said, it's your people. He's now saying to God, it's your people, whom you have brought forth out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand. Why should the Egyptians say, with evil intent, he brought them forth to slay them in the mountains? and to consume them from the face of the earth. So Moses is concerned about the reputation of God to the Egyptians. Turn from your fierce wrath and repent of this evil against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have promised I will give to your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever. And the Lord repented. Okay, Moses' prayer prevailed of the evil which he thought to do to his people. Now, God is not a person. We're trying to minimize God to that. But in Moses' eye, his intercessory prayer made an adjustment in what God was about to do. And I think oftentimes God wants us to pray and to prevail and to cry and to beg and beseech as we intercede for others. I'm sure tonight there are many sick people, many people we're praying for, and we want to prevail upon the Lord in praying for them. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tablets of the covenant in his hands, and God wrote on both sides of them, so they weren't maybe as big as some of the pictures that you've seen. Tablets that were written on both sides, on the one side and on the other were they written. And the tablets were the work of God, and the writings, or the writing, was the writing of God graven upon the tables. When Joshua heard, because Joshua was his assistant, he was in the wing, he would take over his leadership as a prophet, heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, there is a noise of war in the camp. But he said, it is not the sound of shouting for victory or the sound of the cry of defeat, but the sound of singing that I hear. And I told you, it was an orgy. And as soon as he came near the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, Moses' anger burned hot, and he threw the tables out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. And of course, you know, that speaks volumes. And he took the calf, which they had made, and burnt it with fire and ground it to powder and scattered it upon the water and made the sons of Israel drink it. This is what you want? Here you go. You can have it. Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do to you that you have brought a great sin upon them? Aaron was a weak leader. And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord burn hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And I said to them, let any who have gold take it off. So they gave it to me, and I threw it in the fire, and there came out this calf. You know, the fact that he was the artisan, the fact, you know, that he initiated this was never brought out. He then cast the buck and blamed it on the people. And when we have weak leadership, it has a great impact on people, because he could have done some more responsible things as they were waiting on Moses. And when Moses saw that the people had broken loose, for Aaron had let them break loose to their shame among their enemies, then Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, who is on the Lord's side? Come to me. And all of the sons of Levi gathered themselves together to him. This is really the establishment of the Levitical priesthood. The next book in the Bible, the book of Leviticus, will tell all about them. Before, a man was a priest in his own home. And certainly we do have the priesthood of believers in the New Testament, but we also have priests, presbyters as well. And he said to them, Thus says the Lord God of Israel, put every man his sword on his side and go back and forth from gate to gate and slay every man his brother and every man his companion and every man his neighbor. And the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and there fell of the people that day about 3,000 men. And Moses said, today you have ordained yourselves for the service of the Lord, each one at the cost of his son and of his brother, that he may bestow a blessing upon you this day. Sacrifices involved in the priesthood. The next day Moses said to the people, you have sinned a great sin, and now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin. Okay, this is before Christ. So he's going to try to make reparations here and amend for their sins. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, alas, this people have sinned a great sin. They have made for themselves gods of gold. You know, we have to ask ourselves, what have we made into a god? Okay, and you have to answer that question yourself. Okay, it could be education, it could be prestige, it could be sexual immorality, it could be drinking, it could be your ethnicity. There are a lot of things that they're all good in themselves, but once they're put above God, we then make them our God. And again, they can't hear, they can't answer your prayer, they can't see, they can't speak to you, they can't smell, they can't taste. And so it's so important. And we think, you know, we're involved in idolatry. But we are. You know, we have on our dollar in God we trust, but I wonder if that's really the truth. Okay? And we all experience this shift of allegiances. Okay? We can even idolize our country. When we went into the military, we raised our hand for God first. And what I'm talking about is priority. I love my country. I'm a patriot. Okay? I love my ethnicity. I love my wife. Okay? There's a lot of different things. I love my studies and my books. But we have to shift sometimes when they make them, we make them our God and think that they're going to provide the answers for us. And we give affection and worship to them rather than utilizing them as something that helps us through life. And their enjoyment things that we experience, golfing, shooting, things of that nature. If I'm going shooting instead of worshiping God, and I'm not saying one time, you know, then I got to question my priorities. You know, if I'm staying at work, you know, rather than spending time with my family, I'll tell you a quick story. My daughter, my baby daughter, who just got married. I was deployed when she was born. It seemed like I always was deployed for her birthday. One night I went into class. I said, tonight is my daughter's birthday. I'm leaving and going to her party. Good night. And I left the class there. And so, you know, that's important to me, you know, teaching and being a professor, but it can't be more important than being at my daughter's birthday party. So let me finish the rest of this chapter and then just have us contemplate a little bit on what we might idol, overshadowing our relationship to God. And again, I'm not talking about when the Bible talks about God being jealous. God is not insecure, but God knows that these other things eventually will fail us. Okay, the Bible says some trust in chariots, some trust in horses, but we will trust in the Lord our God. Horses and chariots are good, but they break down. And in battle, they may fail you, but God will not. And so we want to look at that more precisely. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, alas, this people have sinned a great sin. They have made for themselves gods of gold. And now, if you will forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, had the same thing. He said, Lord, I'm willing to give up my salvation for the salvation of the people of Israel. And Moses, and I think Paul was probably mimicking Moses here. He's saying, Lord, if you won't forgive them, blot me out. That's true leadership, willing to sacrifice, just like he told the Levitical priest after the great judgment that was brought on the people. But now, if you will forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I beg you, out of your book, which you have written. But the Lord said to Moses, whoever has sinned against me, him will I blot out of my book. Now, God doesn't really have a book. God remembers everything. But now go lead the people to the place in which I have spoken to you. Behold, my angel shall go before you. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And the Lord sent a plague. See, there are consequences to our sin upon the people because they made the calf, which Aaron made. And truly, it didn't happen magically as he tried to say that it would. So what is idolatry? You know, I gave you a very brief definition of my own. An idol is anything that replaces God as our object of worship, okay? We're just esteeming something as if it were God. You know, we talk about the monetary system, and look what just happened to this mini Madoff, okay? Having all of this money, next thing you know, it's God. No, it's not God. It's gone. Okay, but you make it into a god. You kind of molding it into something that you can control and domesticate, but also that you can worship, that's serving you. Whereas when we serve God, we're serving God and his purpose. So I think in America, I have a student that I'm mentoring. He's at Harvard now. I had him as a student in another college before. And he's doing a lot of work on idolatry. And I think it's so subtle that sometimes we don't recognize that we're involved in it because we're not worshiping and bowing down to a golden calf. That's all I have. Thank you. Questions?
Any comments or questions, Rich?
No. I know that story. I just have trouble with a vengeful and jealous God. Okay, that just, you know, a problem I have. It to me, it contradicts the New Testament. All right. But I believe, you know, this was written in the context of the time. All right.
Yep. All right, folks.
And I think that you can find as many things like Ananias and Sapphira being killed because they lied to the Holy Spirit in the New Testament, and you can find a lot of mercy and grace in the Old. There's really not an inconsistency. I understand what you're saying, but, you know, the Scripture says that the fear of the Lord is what keeps us from sin. And if we think, you know, God is a marshmallow or a Santa Claus with candy in his pocket, I think that we kind of misunderstand the potential, not that God would use all his power against us, but I think sometimes we have more of a domesticated view of the greatness of God. And the people were not destroyed. I mean, God was merciful, but I accept and understand, you know, where you're coming from with that perspective.
All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back in about 10 minutes, so enjoy the music. All right, folks. So we took a little bit of break, and we got about 3 minutes left. So the two songs that you listened to was a group called Vlasis. That's V-L-A-S-I-S. And the first song was Alexandria, and the second song was called Moonshine. So pretty cool song. You know, I really like acoustic guitars. I like music. I really do. But I wanted to come circle back around because I got a good friend that runs the Green Beret Pack. You know, we had a lot of success this year in the elections. Let me just tell you. We got some veterans elected. I'm talking, you know, Green Berets and Navy SEALs, you know, Marcus Luttrell, you know, we got Van Oden up in Wisconsin. And let me tell you, those were tough races, really tough races. But as him and I spoke and we're talking about what we're going to do in the next couple of years, we're going to really take a look at what I was talking about in the beginning of this show and how, you know, we want our elected officials to get more involved in what's going on against the children in America. I mean, honestly. And I'm not just talking about trafficking and pedophilia, but I'm talking about this constant push to try to get these kids to self-identify something that they're not, their brains are not developed enough to where they can make those decisions. So you have these kooky teachers, and in some cases counselors, and not all of them are kooky. I mean, there's some really good teachers, but there are some that are really kooky, and everyone can agree to that. I mean, we've seen it, okay? It's come out. I've noticed an increase with you know, teachers, especially female teachers now, getting caught having sex with multiple young teenage boys, very impressionable. And, you know, we think, well, you know, they're boys, you know, it's a little different for boys. It's not. It's not any different for a boy. It's destroying their minds, okay, and it's causing them, you know, great grief. You know, I mean, I know we all joked around, you know, and we all saw the hot young teacher that was in school, and we all had these visions, but we never would have, you know, thought for a minute that it would have turned into something like the stuff he announced. It's really crazy. It's really perverted. And it's hurting the youth of America badly. But it was really bad, you know, when you see kids as young as the first grade that are now, you know, wanting to self-identify as they're, you know, they were born little boys and they decide that they want to be a little girl. And you got parents that are encouraging that. Don't do that. I mean, I think that's a form of child abuse. I really do, because you're not helping that child. You know, I mean, what you should be doing is teaching them, you know, the fundamental skills of life. You know, not trying to, you know, to prop them up and dress them up and say, hey, look, accept me. Here I am, you know. And so trust me when I say the abuse against these children going to be addressed by every one of those veterans that got elected. I'm telling you, and they're coming at it hard after January. So stand by, folks. Stand by. So we're going to bring Rich Kilblaine on here. And Rich, you've got the mic, buddy.
Okay. Well, I wanted to expand on my skepticism about the writing of the Old Testament. With this, and see the theme of the Old Testament, especially what Father Michael just read, is that God punishes the wicked on earth and rewards the good. But, you know, how many good, righteous, and holy men and women do we know that get sick, that get cancer, that die, okay? They have financial struggles. And so if you, I mean, I mean, seriously, I'm going to tell you, when I went through my trial, people look at you and go, so what sin am I being punished for? What sin was Ron being punished for? What sin is Sandy being punished for? So it's your turn for the rebuttal. That's my problem with that.
Of course.
We
dispelled that in the book of Job, which would have come right after the book of Abraham. But I'm going to read from a Hebrew scholar just something small, because I know you have an important thing to share with us tonight. I'm looking forward to it. The story of the golden calf is another example of the Hebrew Bible depicting its people, the Hebrew people, in an honest and therefore often negative and unflattering way. This is one of the most compelling reasons I believe in the historicity of the Torah, and that it is not a man-made document. In the history of religion, there is no parallel. Having said that, it is important to stress that no other group would likely have reacted differently. Ingratitude is a universal trait. And animal worship was a universal practice. That concept is dispelled by the story of Job, because people did think that if you were good, it was all going to be hunky-dory, peaches and cream. And we see that in the suffering servant in Isaiah, which is depicting the life of Jesus, that it makes us spiritually fit when we go through suffering. And so suffering, there's a theology of suffering throughout the Bible, and no real inconsistency in that. Now, I'm not saying that some of what is conveyed to us, you know, isn't conveyed to get across a point, just like we talked about the high poetry of the book of Genesis. But like I said, early on in the Old Testament, in the book of Job, it was established suffering has nothing to do with your righteousness.
Okay, so now the topic I want to talk about is Governor Newsom of California put together a committee 2 years ago to study the idea of paying
reparations.
Reparations to African Americans. Okay. And I got to start off with the thing I really like about America is we got 50 states. We can have 50 different experiments, okay, going on. And I applaud California for trying to do this, because here, let's look at gay marriage, okay? No one likes to have something new shoved down their throat. So the idea was states elected to have legalized gay marriage state by state until it gained such a momentum that it becomes federal policy. And it's the same thing with marijuana. It's gaining momentum. State after state is doing it. They're finding, you know, that it doesn't lead to, I mean, it may have its own problems, but hey, it raises lots of taxes. But it didn't turn out to be as bad as, you know, it wasn't the end of the world, okay? Whereas fentanyl, yeah, hey, we're going to wipe out a lot of our population, okay? So now we come to reparations. They've done a lot of them in, like, how they did this, all right? You know, and you got to keep in mind, California was never a slave state. It came in. It was admitted to the Union in 1850 as a free state. So they never legalized slavery. And they're going to be the first state to pay retributions. Okay. And so what they looked into is the consequences of slavery in America on the pretty much, you know, the standard living economics of former slaves, descendants of former slaves, okay? So Dave Echo, they say, all right. Let's see. So, and keep in mind, you know, when I said they, the first dollar figure, this is the one you're going to see a lot, is $223,000 per person. And that is based on housing discrimination. And you say that, like, what do you mean by housing discrimination? Well, I'm going to tell you, growing up, there was a lot of towns where, and I lived in them, where minorities, in particular blacks, were restricted to living in a certain part of town, okay? And now, in some places like Tulsa, that community could be very flourishing. It could create their own business. It's like a community within a community, all right? But in most cases, those areas that they lived were impoverished, all right? And if they wanted to move out and move into more affluent areas, they were ostracized, okay? So I understand the housing discrimination, okay? $124,000 for mass incarcerations, okay? In other words, they've, you know, I don't know the background to that one. I mean, for mass incarcerations is where they basically just throw everybody in jail. That's a mass, not false incarceration. It didn't say false incarceration. It said mass, where you just round up a bunch of people and throw them in jail. Okay. So, and then the other one is $127,000 for deaths and things like that caused by health harms, okay? In other words, African Americans were not getting the proper medical treatment that and care that whites were, okay? So they're saying based on discrimination and that different standards for this, that they have come up with a total right now, because most of the articles you're going to read, they're focused on the 223,000. No, that's only one of the reparations. The total right now is $475,000 that the committee is recommending that California pays each African American who can trace their ancestry back to the 19th century, because it's going to be really hard to go back and do the genealogy to prove that you descended from a slave. But I like the idea. They're going, well, but if you can trace yourself back to the late 19th century, which should be doable, then odds are, I mean, we probably didn't have a lot of Africans migrating to this country during that time frame. And so any African-American in America in the late 19th century was probably a descendant of a slave. Okay. Now, keep in mind, there was a lot of free communities in a lot of free blacks, even at the beginning of the colonial times. But they probably married somebody that was a slave. So if you trace yourself back to the 19th century, odds are you descended from somebody that was a slave. Okay. Now, that's not everything. I read where one activist said that California should, the reparations should be no less than $800,000. And as I was reading on, I found out that, no, there's actually two other categories. They have not figured out what they should be paid for. One of them is the devaluation of black businesses, unjust taking of property, okay? That problem, I know that definitely happened against the Japanese during World War II. But there's probably plenty of examples in, and I mean, they're doing their homework. They're doing their homework. So I'm sure they've had plenty of examples, and they're supposed to, I guess, look at like, okay, how much did they lose? And how much has that set us back? Okay. And the other category is the wealth gap. Okay. Because this is pretty much held African Americans back, especially in the inner cities, from progressing. Okay. All right. The total for what they've calculated right now, this is the deal. So the total cost to California is $569 billion. Okay. Now, I read that California had a surplus of $100 billion this year, but is expecting a deficit next year. Okay. So, you know, I really want to see this happen however, problem is, I mean, it's an experiment. We can see if this actually improves people's lives. If it raises up African Americans, you know, to an equal par in business and everything else, like whites, okay? Whites are the bad guys right now, okay? But I'm sitting there going, how are you going to pay for this, all right? Which I assume they're not going to get the $475,000 or the $800,000. They're going to get something less. Now, there'll be some problems with that when you get everybody's expectations up and then tell them, no, you're going to get something less. Then they're, yeah, like you said, there's a theory about revolutions and rising expectations. All right, now, is this going to help? That's going to be the big question. Now, my problem is mainstream media is going to hail this as a great success before they even study it, okay? Because you start writing checks of hundreds of thousands of dollars to individuals, they have just won the lottery. Corporations is going to be the equivalent of winning the lottery, a high-stakes lottery. Okay? So, guys, well, okay, so let me state some statistics, right? There's studies on this. 70% of the lottery winners, we're talking big money winners, go broke in 3 to 5 years, okay? 1% of lottery winners go bankrupt every year. So is this really going to solve the problem? Guys, your thoughts.
I think it's a great illustration, a great comparison. As you were given the statistics, and I've heard the statistics about those who win the lottery, but I'm wondering if, you know, in a sense, I believe in reparations. Let me explain. But will it really solve the problem, as you said? Will it really satisfy the people, and can it be done equitably, or is it going to be, you know, a lot of people that aren't really recipients or shouldn't be recipients and things of that nature? But when you haven't learned how to control money and it controls you, I can see a lot of disasters happening as well. And not that that should be a reason not to reward somebody if they're really warranted, but I think it's a great comparison.
See, I'll give you some examples that I have personally seen. All right, For example, people who receive their severance pay, all right, officers who get passed over for promotion, the Army will give them that, a lot of money. Oh, actually, after around the time of Desert Storm, no, it wasn't that. It was before Desert Storm. The Army wanted to cut back so much. They were offering like $70,000 or a 15-year retirement for officers to resign and leave early, okay? And what I saw is a number of people who got that cash payment, turn around, many of them bought expensive new cars, okay? And enough of them bought. I had a girlfriend who her house burnt down, and she got this huge insurance check. She went out and bought her a very, very expensive purple car. She liked purple. And I'm sitting there going like, I mean, that's a brand new car, but it's going to become old. Oh, I'll give you another one. A friend of mine, we created a small business together, and we just did it out of fun, but it actually paid his bills. And we were designing patches. And so another company, now, he went into partnership with someone else, and unfortunately, he did not invest in stock. So he had the business, you know, so he told me, like, when they split up, he said he hadn't, you know, the business, we called it BDU, Battle Dress Unlimited, and he goes, he needed so much money to be able to buy Battle Dress. I said, what do you mean buy it back? You are it. It's a name. It's a business. And then he admitted that he was not buying inventory, that he took all his money. See, it was a partnership. His partner had business sense, was investing patches we designed. You know, he was selling them, and my friend was just basically working, like, on commission or whatever. And so he had a windfall that another, you know, surplus store or whatever had stolen two of our copyrighted patches and produced them. That was $100,000 each. And so all of a sudden he gets of course the lawyer gets his cut. So he gets this windfall. You think he's going to take that money and invest in his business? No, he bought a van. Okay. I think he also spent some of it into his house. Now, investing in your home, that's not a bad idea. That's an investment. Okay.
Right.
But I find this pattern. Everybody buys a new car. Feel good, at least temporarily. You know, I'm like, I will tell you this. My opinion is there are going to be people who benefit from it, who invest wisely. Okay.
Uh-huh.
They probably don't need these reparations. I believe the people who need who need help, you know, raising their standard of living are the ones who are going to buy the cars. And I'm going to get into something else. Hey, what about the homeless black person who gets, let's say, $300,000? How long do you think that's going to last?
Okay. So you're talking reparations for slavery, right?
Being a descendant of a slave. See, keep in mind, there is no black person, no African American alive today that was ever a slave. And there is no white person in this country who ever owned a slave. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
the past.
Unless they lived in Africa, and because, you know, believe me, slavery's still alive and well in Africa.
No, I know. But see, the Africans that come to this country do very well for themselves.
Yeah.
All right.
So number one, I've always been opposed to this. I have, and
mm-hmm.
And not just for the
but
reasons
here,
that.
Here's a chance. It says, are you opposed because of your gut feelings? Let's discuss.
I'm opposed because, you know, I don't like I don't think people should get money. Again, I go back to the whole meritocracy that, you know,
right,
that we talked about.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like you're I'll just say this. I have family members who, you know, live, you know, meagerly that I have given them a lot of money in my life.
Yes.
And they blow it on whatever.
Right. That is the pattern. And that's what we're finding, like, with the lottery winners. Go ahead.
That, if you do that, and let's say you give it to the homeless or to somebody
mm-hmm.
that, you know, most likely they're homeless. There's an addiction there. Okay. So let me
right.
tell you, the only people that are going to make money.
There's mental
is
issues. There's
cartels.
Usually mental issues there. Yeah. So
yeah,
somebody's
I mean,
going to swindle them of that. They're not going to benefit from that $300,000. Somebody else is going to get it.
Well,
okay.
and no American, and not very many American companies are going to benefit from that either. So, I mean, you know, I think.
Oh,
well,
no. I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to tell you this. Okay, remember, 70% of lottery winners, big lottery winners, will be broke in 3 to 5 years. This is the closest comparison I can make.
Rich, I have a real life comparison. My daughter was
okay,
in
go
an
ahead.
Indian
go
tribe.
Ahead.
My daughter, who was in the Indian tribe, you know, who passed away, we made sure she had a lawyer. We never took
right.
a cent. And when she was 18, she got a big check.
Right.
And she blew it. You know, she went and bought furniture.
Hey, I grew up among the Poncas. That's exactly what they did when they got,
mm-hmm.
I forgot what they called it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when they turn 18, they get this, like this big annuity or whatever. And
yeah.
they all bought cars. They all bought cars. That's the best. My girlfriend, she couldn't wait to turn 18 so she could buy herself a new car. That's
mm-hmm.
it. They didn't invest it, all right?
That's right. That's right. Didn't improve
yeah,
their lifestyle.
It's a, that's
right.
a common pattern. All right. So I'm so if you the closest comparison we can make with reparations where you write someone a big check is the lottery. Okay,
mm-hmm.
what's the success rate on that? It's a lot.
Not much.
All right. So 70% of the people you paid this money to are going to be broke in 3 to 5 years, and some of them are going to be bankrupt. Well, why are they going to be broke? Because what they spend the money on. Now, let me tell you, what happens when somebody wins a big lottery check?
They don't tell anybody.
Well, see, that's the problem. Like here in Virginia, you don't have the choice. You have to announce it. But, yeah, ideally that what they say is you don't go get the check right away. You don't turn in your lottery ticket right away. You want it because everybody's looking for you. But the thing is, when people find out who – your family finds out you want it, they're going to hound you. And it said also that a lot of the lottery winners, several reasons they go broke. One is they're paying off my house. Well, your brother or your sister or your cousin, they want you to pay their house off too, okay? And it's all these charitable organizations that are going to hound you. Now, I guarantee you right now, because this word has gone out, the scammers are already planning how to get that money from
those
people, okay? See, you know, while the mainstream media will hail this as a great success, and California, they're saying, we'll be the first and we'll set the standard, and that will encourage the rest of the nation. We need to study this. And like you said, the lottery experience, 3 to 5 years. Let's go back and let's look at 3 to 5 years. Is anybody's life, is the majority of the people's lives better off? And there's going to be a number, you're going to have plenty of success stories. But those people were probably going to be successes anyway. They were going to be successes if they got a loan, right? Because they're smart, right? When I say smart, I'm talking you had good business sense. Most people
mm-hmm.
don't, all right? And here's the other thing, fast money. Because I worked with guys who, they became what we call today government contractors. You know, back then we called them mercenaries. we used to say OGAs, working for other government, doing the same thing I did in the Army, okay? With few exceptions, most of the people I know who made fast money spent it fast. And the reason, they didn't save it. And I there's a guy I know who goes into Ukraine and he guards nuclear sites and stuff like that, and he's making a lot of money, and he hasn't saved a penny. I keep telling him, I said, you got to start putting money away. This gig is not going to last forever. You need to invest in an education. I mean, what you're doing, you got a lot of time on your hands. Get a college degree while you're sitting there guarding these sites. No.
Can I mention something?
Go ahead.
That James said, James, we have always talked about this with gambling. And I think, James, what you were saying is people should not reap where they haven't sown.
Yeah.
I understand the whole principle, and I understand that people were stepped over. But I also understand that if you're not in the right frame of mind, it could destroy your life. If either one of us here tonight all of a sudden came into $1 billion, that's why the Bible says don't let your character be tainted by money.
Yeah.
We don't know how we would respond. And so if you really don't, I'm not only talking about having a financial advisor, I'm just talking about your own character and your priorities. And
yeah.
I think you're making a really good point.
Yeah, you know, it goes back to what James is saying is, you got to earn it. You've got to earn it. And I'm gonna hail California for taking this step. Let's see if it really benefits anybody, because if it's a failure, which unfortunately the mainstream media will only focus on the percentages of successes. We should look at how can we fix the problems of the past. How can, you know, because prejudice, racism, and all this has held, you know, a number of say black businessmen back. Okay, so how do we fix that? All right, you know, again, we say if you have to work for it, you appreciate it more. Well, then let's give. All right, educate. Let's pick. You know, let's go into, we know education is the trick, key to success, to get out of poverty. So let's go into these urban poor centers and go, hey, if you get the grades, we'll give you this much money, go to any college you want. And we will pay this much. Let's say we'll pay $200,000 for it. You can go to Harvard or whatever. If you can maintain the grades. So if you work hard to get the grades, here's your scholarship. If you maintain your grades, you get this education. Do something like that with the business side. But the idea California has is just to write a check. That's winning the lottery.
Bill Cosby has paid for, I know when I taught at Hampton University, he had paid for several people's education. And I think, you know, giving a hand up and not a hand out.
Right.
An opportunity.
That's right. That's right.
With people who don't have it. But I want to ask you, do you think that their economic base could really, you know, because you're going to have
that's
all kinds
the other
of
thing.
Applying.
I don't think they can
yeah.
afford it. No,
uh-huh.
I don't think they can afford it. And
yeah,
what,
good
that
idea.
Means is,
mm-hmm.
what that means is, and because if I remember, because I lived in California, many of the states, and I think California one, cannot have a deficit like our nation. The federal government can borrow money. California can't. So for them to pay the reparations, they're going to have to raise taxes. They already
yeah.
have a massive exodus. And does that policy, does it apply to only people who are African-Americans living in California at the date we sign this bill, or anybody that moves into this state?
Right.
Yeah, no, that I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the other question. I don't think you can afford it. And are you going to
yeah.
end up destroyed? I mean, California's already destroyed its economy. And, you know, people are fleeing. Small businesses are fleeing that. And big businesses do.
stationed there, you know, in 71, 72. Yeah. And I've been back since. And, you know, there's one thing, and I think politicians do this with all of our money. They talk big talk, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, but they're not, who's going to pay the bill and who's going to benefit? And, you know, there's a lot. And I'm not saying everything's reduced to money, but, you know, you might disappoint a lot of people and you might create a revolt, or you might create something
that was
that
okay
can't
the revolt
be sustained.
Part, that was the premise of the thesis of, or the theme of Rising Expectations. There's a book written on it, and this is during the 60s mm-hmm. when we're studying revolution and the J curve. And that was, as people's lives improve, they have greater expectations. You know, you look at Iran places or the Middle East, is that their expectations for improvement continue to rise exponentially. And when the government's not able to provide that, then all of a sudden you have revolt, which leads to insurrection. So when you build people's hopes up and then tell them, no, we don't have that money, you know, you can create problems. But I'm going to tell you right now, there's going to be a lot of people who will benefit from the reparations, and it will not be the people who get the checks. It's the people
yeah.
who get who warn you. If you study the period of gold mining,
mm-hmm.
except for that first year, the placer mining, the people were scooping up gold out of the sand and gravel. They made money. Everybody else that went back there and worked in those mines, the flood of people coming out there, they did not get rich. Okay? You want to know who got rich? The merchants that were selling them everything at higher prices. They became rich. Yeah. San Francisco,
you know,
was built up from all the shipping, the merchants and stuff that were benefiting from the gold mining industry. The miners themselves, they struggled and lucky to make ends meet in this incredible inflation. Okay? That's what you're going to see.
You know, I've been teaching in the university for about 20 years, and I've had a number of African-American students. I've taught in an HBCU, even the nurses that I had when I had my surgery, they were phenomenal. I think 95% of them were African-American. They were phenomenal. They cared for me really well. And so I think there's been a lot of education. I think even from Booker T. Washington's book, Up From Slavery, there has been a real move. You know, Dr. King was a great example as well. But I'm just wondering if things could be done, like, I like what you're saying, like, we'll give you this money, but it's got to be spent for education. In other words, or you have to start a business.
Or invest in a business.
Yes. Yeah. You know what
I'm
saying? Otherwise,
something that is going
it's
going to
be
the
Bentley, you know?
Right.
Or the Rolls.
So,
and anybody would do that, not just African-Americans, just like we talked
about
the Hebrew
you,
people.
I mean, when I was reading what they're talking about paying African, I said, wait a minute, what about the Native Americans? What about the Japanese? What about the
mm-hmm.
Hispanics? I mean, the same, I mean, when you're
the
looking
Jews
at
from the Egyptians.
But when you're looking at what qualified the African Americans for reparations, we're talking,
mm-hmm.
And this was a study based on not the 1933 through 1977. How much money or wealth African-Americans have fallen behind on. 1933 to 1977, not what happened in the 19th century. 19th century qualifies you for this. So let's talk about Hispanic-Americans in California. Oh, my God.
Right. But
But do you think
repairs the breach? California's going to end up, once they open that can of Pandora's box, they're going to be paying reparations to everybody.
But let's look at the word a minute, reparation. Do you think it's going to repair the injustice or the insult or whatever people are asking for reparation for? Do you think that is going to bring, when I use the word appeasement, I'm not doing that in a condescending way, but do you think that's going to heal the problem? Is that going to repair? That's what reparation means. Repair.
I've already stated what I believe. I believe it's going to be like the lottery.
Right. Yeah,
a small percentage of people who are going to benefit from this would benefit. We're going to be successes anyway. And
James had
the people who really benefit are going to be the merchants or scammers. Okay, the people who can sell, swindle
the drug cartels. The drug cartels will make a lot of money. So when we talk reparations, you know, don't forget the Irish, too, because a lot of, you know, our heritage, you know, was brought over here and enslaved and served as.
No. All right. I already tell you. You start giving the Irish checks, they're going to drink it all.
Okay, that.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. And get in fights. Okay. Right.
Yeah,
I won't bring up the Italians.
Oh,
well,
yeah. There we go.
So here's my question. When I'm asked about this, I say, okay, what about the 400, the families, the lineage of the families of the 400,000 white Americans that died defeating the Confederacy and ending slavery
again,
in the Civil War?
James, this had, that's when I'm reading about this, it had nothing to do. The whole idea, the irony is California's a free state, never allowed slavery, and yet it's going to be, it plans to be the first state to pay reparations. It's based on standard of living, that the conditions of the slavery affected every state, and that it basically held African Americans back from progress, that it hurt them in businesses. They were not given the fair treatment. They were hurt in housing. They were not allowed to live. So this is what it's all about. It's the examination is the period of 1933 through 1977. Has nothing to do
with the cutoff on the day of birth. That should be the cutoff. If you were born after 1977, then you obviously were not affected.
No. You missed it. You have to descend from slaves. So, the reparations are based on the economic ills caused and social status caused by the unfair practices, the racism, and all the institutional racism. And they studied from 1933 to 19. It's not you were there in California. No, this is what that committee is basing. This is how much we owe. California owes in order to make up the difference. All African Americans who can trace themselves back to the 19th century will qualify for this.
And do they know how much that will be?
I just told you.
$400,000.
Huh?
$800,000.
This is the recommendation. They still, I think, have another year to finish this. What I gave you is the dollar amount that the committee is recommending. And there's two other categories that they've got to come up with a dollar figure about. And it will. So we're already looking at $475,000 total. And, you know, so it may get up close to the $800,000. Right?
Hey, look, I hope California does it because it will break their
economy. Right. Well, no, you shouldn't look at it like that. You should not look at it like that. What you should look at it like is, let's see, this is an experiment. As I said, we have 50
again, it's just another form of welfare that is going to...
Okay, that's right, which is another form of slavery.
It is another form of... Exactly. That's
it's economic slavery. When you make... The new master is not that white guy with the hat and the whip and riding the horse. Your new master is the government.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a socialist mindset that it'll ever have.
No, I believe it's going to. I believe they are going to pay some amount.
Because he wants to run for president. He's talking about the border even. So I think some of this we got to kind of question the motivation too.
Hey, look, this would be political suicide to create the commission, have them come up with a dollar amount, and then you go, we ain't going to do it.
Yeah.
That would be political suicide for him. He has to pay something. He has to get California to pay something to justify this commission.
Yeah.
Or our lands.
I just can't see that. Well, it'll break their economy, and they'll drive people out of the state of California.
Well, that's what they've been on a train wreck for a long time.
Good.
I mean, there's a massive exodus from California to primarily Texas. Okay.
Florida.
Yeah. No, Florida is people escaping from New York.
But that's why Newsom put a commercial in Florida, kind of that's his competitor, too, in many ways.
Yeah, right. Well, that's who we're actually expecting to see realistically is the Florida governor and the California governor running against each other instead of Trump and Biden. Okay.
Well. It'll be interesting to see, but
I think we're out of time, guys.
Oh, yeah, we are out of time. My goodness, we talked right through it. All right, folks.
Yeah.
Go ahead close the
Lord
heal our recording.
Land.
Go ahead, Father Michael.
I just want to say, Lord, heal our land. Amen.
Amen.
Talking about the year of Jubilee and, debt and helping people, but Lord, heal our land. Amen.
Amen. God bless you, folks. Have a good weekend. Sorry we ran over.